The next case to be heard is number 2010-0900, Worthington City Schools Board of Education versus Franklin County Board of Revision. The appellant is Weber Sisters Enterprises. Yeah, I'm confused by my own sheet here. I think some people are on the wrong side, but that's okay. Mr. Petkovic, I believe we'll hear from you on behalf of the owner.
Thank you, sir.
Morning, Master Commissioner. The cause and matter before the court arose from a determination of the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals that was issued upon a remand of the matter from this court to the Board of Tax Appeals. The previous case was Worthington City Schools Board of Education versus Franklin County Board of Revision, 124 Ohio State 3rd, 27, 2009, Ohio 5932. It's a November 17th, 2009 determination of this court. The issue presented in that previous case, the issue decided by the court, or the issue that the court indicated should be decided, is contained in paragraph 3, and it's the same fundamental problem in the current appeal. This court stated at paragraph 3, page 2 of its decision, on appeal, Weber Sisters argues that the school district failed to discharge its burden of proof as the appellant from the Board of Revision's rejection of the sale price, and that the BTA findings are not supported by the evidence. In one respect, we agree. The BTA failed to give full consideration to whether the sale was recent, in quotes, with respect to the lien dates for the tax year 2004 and 2005. We therefore vacate and remand. This issue went back to the Board of Tax Appeals. The Board of Tax Appeals authored the opinion that's now on appeal before this court, which is virtually identical to the one that the court reversed and remanded to the Board of Tax Appeals in the first instance in 2009. The facts in this matter are really not in dispute. Matter of fact, the facts were determined by the Supreme Court itself. And in paragraph 5 of the 2009 decision, the court indicated in February 2006 there was a hearing before the Board of Revision, which started this entire procedure, and that Weber Sisters and as principals of the entity, along with exhibits, it included a rent roll and an appraisal that was offered, not as direct evidence of value, but it's rather as documentation of Weber Sisters' vain attempt to sell the property. The court went on to paragraph 6 and indicated the Weber Sisters' purchase was predicated on the seller's leasing most of the space in the two buildings, each of which comprised 7,500 square feet of commercial space. Mrs. Merrill testified that the price we paid was for totally occupied units, meaning in this case that the sale price would occur with leases in place for 11,740 of the 15,000 total square feet. And the court went on to say, but immediately after the May 2003 sale, it became clear that two tenants slated to occupy the largest portions of the building, Boston Market and Fiesta Fresh, would not take possession. The former initially honored rent obligations, the latter did not. During 2004, Cold Stone Creamery began paying less and less and ultimately vacated its lease premises during 2005 and defaulted on its lease obligations. Another tenant, Mark Pies, experienced financial difficulty and on.
Could you spring ahead and say what precisely did the BTA do wrong?
In essence, you have this litany of facts found and determined by this court as operative facts in this case. And the court on remand indicated very clearly that the term recent, as the court used it, and it's always in quotation marks, that the term recent is something other than a timeline. And the court remanded it to the Board of Tax Appeals, and they gave the board very specific instructions. They said, on remand, we want you to look at the entire record. We want you to make a determination whether or not the circumstances had changed. And we're talking about circumstances in terms of the word recent, and I think that's where everybody gets hung up, is circumstances. The court talks about market conditions in some of its decisions. It talks about recent in others. But the gravamen of the whole thing is, what really is the term recent? Now, the Board of Tax Appeals has created this paradigm that says, oh, recent means time. And when the court said that, accordingly, we vacate the BTA decision and remand for a determination whether the May 2003 sale was recent, again in quotes, as to the tax years 2004 and 2005, in light of the entire record. Now, the answer that the Board of Tax Appeals came up with after that very specific direction from this court is contained in its decision at page 12. And here, the last paragraph of that particular decision is the ultimate finding of fact and conclusion of the Board of Tax Appeals with regard to that issue. And the board says here, the evidence does not support that the May 2003 sale was too remote from the tax lien date January 1, 2004 or January 1, 2005. They're still hung up on time. And the court said, we want you to look at circumstances. And instead of looking at the circumstances, the Board of Tax Appeals looked at its calendar. And that's why we're here. And the fact of the matter is, in the appellant's brief, at the appendix 19 and following that, is it a decision? It's an interesting decision of the Board of Tax Appeals from June 15, 2010, and the Cleveland Board of Education versus Cuyahoga County Board of Revision and Stellar Incorporated. Now, the interesting part of that case is at page 23. The Board of Tax Appeals goes into a discussion of the Supreme Court's decision in this case, which I find rather interesting, because in this case, that's on appeal here from the most recent decision of the Board of Tax Appeals, they got hung up on time. They talked about time. It's not too remote in time. Not remote in circumstances, remote in time. And at page 23, or A23, which is page 5 of that particular BTA decision,
well, it says, didn't the BTA, though, devote, in this case, some discussion to the circumstance and conclude that it was not a change in circumstance?
What the Board of Tax Appeals did, Master Commissioner, is the most perfunctory lip service I've seen in any remand case that's gone to the Board of Tax Appeals in 40 years. That's what they did. It was a perfunctory remand. We don't like your decision. By God, we're going to quote what you did, and then we're going to ignore it and find a sale is a sale is a sale, and recent means time. Now, in that particular decision from the Cleveland case that's in our appended to our brief, in discussing that particular decision that was remanded, the BTA said, in Worthington Schools presented a situation similar to the present matter. In that appeal, a Board of Education offered a sale of certain property in May 2003 as proof of an increase in the value of the property for the tax years 2004 and 2005. Here's the interesting language where they analyzed the case that you told them to analyze but didn't analyze in this decision. It said, the property owner, however, presented evidence to the BOR that the market circumstances under which the sale was contemplated had rapidly deteriorated after the sale was concluded. They're talking about this case. Said everything deteriorated rapidly after 2003, ignoring in the decision on appeal here this court's injunction to look at the entire record and determine whether or not it is recent. And the recent is circumstances. It's tantamount to you asking me what's the score in a football game, and I say, 3 minutes and 12 seconds in the second quarter. And you say, okay, where's the ball? Who's got possession? It's 3 minutes and 12 seconds in the second quarter. You know, those answers in terms of time are not responsive in terms of your questions as to circumstances. Now, in that particular decision that I appended to the appellant's brief in this particular case, the Board of Tax Appeals said, oh, in this case, this one from Cleveland, said what we have here is a situation where the tenant got murdered, and then there was a check cashing company that could no longer do business because of a change in law. Well, In this particular case, people never took possession of the property. My clients got essentially what was a pig in a poke. They came in with evidence that they tried to sell it. They had appraisals for significantly less than what the tax-free exchange was. And in some respects, I do disagree with the court that a 1031 tax-free exchange is necessary to this super arm's-length kind of sale situation, because it really isn't. It's a tax mechanism to defer capital gain and not anything to establish a market value. But nonetheless, that's what we have to live with. And, you know, and it's interesting, the cases I've cited at pages 2, 3, 4, and 5 of the brief always talk about the Board of Tax Appeals' duty to come up with some independent analysis. Well, that's what the court asked the Board of Tax Appeals to do in the 2009 remand. And what the Board of Tax Appeals did was refuse to follow your instruction. There's no discussion or analysis of these circumstances, but here in June of 2010 pops up a case where they said, oh, that case over there, everything deteriorated after 2003. Whereas in this case, they said, oh, nothing happened. It's not remote in time. But they made a recognition that things deteriorated in terms of the operation of this property, its income stream. There was certainly a bunch of evidence, and there's no discussion in the Board of Tax Appeals' determination in this case with regard to the rent rolls, their impact on the property, the fact that tenants moved out. I gave the board a copy of the pleadings that I filed in Common Pleas Court in Franklin County to remove that one tenant that's mentioned in the Supreme Court's statement of facts. And it took months and months and months, and they had accrued probably $180,000 or $190,000 in back rent and then summarily went bankrupt. So that was more money lost. And parenthetically, I understand that it's not a part of this record. But currently, there are negotiations going on for Weber Sisters to sell this property on a land contract for about $1.3 million. So, you know, this thing has just devolved from one bad thing in 2003 to worse and worse and worse. The fact of the matter is that the Franklin County Board of Revision did not accept that particular 1031 exchange. They didn't accept it. They made a determination of about $2.6 million with regard to the value in exchange or fair market value of the real estate. That was appealed to the Board of Tax Appeals by the Board of Education. And concomitant with that appeal, they had some duty of proof. And I understand that a prima facie case can be made by the conveyance form and the tax thing, but there's a litany of facts that even the Board of Tax Appeals in a subsequent case from Cleveland said, oh, this all deteriorated. And in that particular case, they found the loss of these tenants due to one being murdered and a check cashing business going out of business because there was a change in the law was sufficient to walk away from the sale. In this case, you have a litany of things going on, and no better authority than the Supreme Court made that determination of fact, and yet the Board of Tax Appeals said, page 12 of its decision, it's not too remote in time. They used the word remote. Remote doesn't refer to circumstances. Remote refers to time. And the Board of Tax Appeals, even the court noted in its previous decision, in a footnote, the Board of Tax Appeals said, oh, 8 months from tax lien date, yada, yada, yada. But the fact of the matter is they're hung up on time. And they've created this paradigm that it's all embraced by time. The facts and circumstances don't make any difference, even though I found this one aberrant decision from the Board of Tax Appeals where the loss of tenants was enough. Now, why is it good in the Cleveland case and not good in this case? You know, maybe a different hearing examiner authored the opinion to give to the board for their vote. But the fact of the matter is, this particular decision appealed here does not comport with the instructions of this court. And the instructions were pretty explicit. Review the entire record. That doesn't say look at your calendar and tell me if it's remote in time. The court wanted the Board of Tax Appeals to exercise some intellect with regard to a set of facts that it gave them. And they didn't do that. They gave it lip service, perfunctory at best. Totally perfunctory lip service. And that's why we're here. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, please.
Thank you, Mr. Petkovic. Ms. Kreitz.
Thank you. May it please the court. My name is Allison Kreitz, and I am representing the Appalachian Board of Education of the Worthington City School District. As counsel for the appellant noted a few moments ago, this matter has already been before this court once. On that occasion, as this court has on many others, the court recognized that the best evidence of value is a recent arm's-length sale of the property at issue. The court also made it abundantly clear that evidence of the sale, in this case the deed, and the conveyance fee statement raised the presumption that the sale was both arm's length and recent. The burden then shifted to the party opposing the sale, in this case the appellant, to show with sufficient evidence that the sale was either not arm's length or not recent. Otherwise, the sale remains the best evidence of value. In November 2009, this court deferred to the BTA's explicit determination that the sale was made at arm's length. The BTA determined that the appellant had failed to show with sufficient evidence that the sale was anything other than arm's length. The BTA had also determined that the sale was recent. However, the court was less satisfied with the analysis that the BTA performed with respect to that issue. It therefore remanded back to the BTA for a more thorough review of the record and a more thorough determination of recency. That is the sole issue that we're here on today. Any other issues raised by appellant with respect to arm's length nature and whatnot were already decided in the prior appeal. Again, because the court remanded on recency, the only issue today is whether or not the BTA abused its discretion when it did weigh that evidence, and it determined, based upon the weight that it applied, that the sale of the subject property was recent. In its decision, the court provided specific instructions to the BTA. It stated that it wanted the BTA to weigh the significance of four items. Those items are the purchase contract, the other documentation of sale, the testimony, and the documentation presented to the BOR. The court emphasized, however, that it was not prejudging the outcome of the BTA's decision on remand. It simply wanted the BTA to perform a more thorough analysis, and it wanted the BTA to rely upon something more than a footnote and a reference to temporal proximity, which the BTA did on remand. On remand, the BTA weighed the significance of the four items specified by this court. It reviewed the first item, the purchase contract. Even though this item was never identified, it was never authenticated, and it is unclear whether or not this was actually a full and complete copy of this agreement. It wasn't even presented by the appellant. It was presented by the BOE after it had been discovered through discovery at a hearing in front of the BTA that the appellant did not even attend. When this was presented, again, potentially as hearsay, it was presented in support of the sale, and the court recognized that it formed a troika together with the deed and the conveyance fee statement to raise the presumption of an arm's length sale and recency. The BTA reviewed the purchase contract with respect to recency on remand. And when it did, it noted that it does not provide any support for a changing market subsequent to the sale. The second item, any other documents of sale, is limited to the deed and the conveyance fee statement. And again, these two items raise the presumption of recency and arm's length nature. Nothing in them would in any way demonstrate a change in the market or a change to the property after the sale that would somehow rebut the presumption of recency. The third item instructed by this court was the testimony presented to the Board of Revision. And this is limited to the testimony of Ms. Morrell, one of the members of the appellant Weber Sisters, also known as Baba Link. BTA recognized that Ms. Morrell had discussed her expectations and her experiences after the sale that were not realizations of her goals. The BTA also recognized that the potential purchaser may have had certain actions in 2005 that were dissimilar to Ms. Morrell and her sister's experiences. The BTA recognized these assertions about the potential purchasers, even though they are hearsay as well. The offerors were not present at the hearing, either in front of the BOR or the BTA to testify, nor were they present to be cross-examined. And any of the purported sale documents for this purported offer were never presented to the BOR or the BTA. Nevertheless, the BTA considered this evidence because it was instructed to do so by this court. It found, however, that there is a difference between unforeseen circumstances and unfulfilled goals. And it clarified that the experiences at the property, based upon the testimony, had no clear connection to a change in the market. An appellant had failed to demonstrate how that testimony supported either a change in the market or a change at the subject property that would somehow rebut the recency of the sale. The BTA specifically noted, we are unable to characterize the property owner's lack of familiarity with the market and failure to exercise due diligence as a change in the market. This was an explanation, again, of why the subject property's experience post-sale was not necessarily significant to a determination of recency if there was no clear connection between those experiences and a change in the market. This was also an explanation of how the BTA disagreed with the BOR. What we don't know is what Ms. Morell and her sisters would have experienced before the sale versus after the sale in terms of the market, because there has been no demonstrated change. The last item on the list from this court was documentation presented to the BOR. This is limited to the Koenig appraisal. Much like the other documents and testimony in the record, this was never authenticated because the appraiser was not present at the Board of Revision hearing, and he was not present at the BTA hearing. The BTA recognized, as the Board of Revision had, that this was not evidence of value because the appraiser was not there, he had not prepared it for the purposes of ad valorem taxation, and it was not dated as a tax lien date. The BTA also recognized that it was not evidence of recency. It specifically noted that the appraisal failed to support any argument of a change in the market between May 2003 and January 1, 2004, or January 1, 2005, the two relevant tax lien dates in this matter. The appraiser simply did not analyze a change in the market. He didn't even analyze the sale of the subject property from May of 2003. He simply dismissed the sale, assuming that it was some sort of inflated purchase price, and moved on with his report, which was only intended to assist the appellant in marketing the property in late 2005. The appellant did not provide any other documentation, whether it be the purported offers from the other side or the purported appraisals commissioned by the potential purchaser. And again, since these were unaccepted offers and the offerors were not there, any such statements are hearsay. One thing is clear, though, is that the $3.9 million offer, if it actually existed, tends to support the sale price from May of 2003, not the auditor's value. It is significantly much more closer to the May of 2003 sale price than it is to the auditor's value from either 2003 or 2004. BTA not only reviewed these four items that were specified by the court, but it also noted that it thoroughly reviewed the entire record. And based upon this review, it determined that this lack of knowledge or lack of familiarities or the vacancies post-sales that were alleged had not been sufficient enough to rebut the presumption of recency. The court was not relying upon temporal proximity. The board was not, I apologize, as it had in the apparently done in the prior decision, and contrary to appellant's assertions, it clearly reviewed the contents of the entire record, and based upon the weight that it applied, it determined that this sale was recent. The appellant may not agree with the BTA's conclusions, but they are based upon factual determinations, and as such, the standard today is an abuse of discretion. The BTA has wide discretion to determine credibility, and this court has stated that it will not reverse the BTA on that discretion unless there's an abuse that has been demonstrated. Appellant has not pointed to any specific abuse of discretion in the notice of appeal, in the brief, or here today. And without any such indication, really, this court doesn't even have jurisdiction of this matter under the requirements of 5717.04. Without jurisdiction, we couldn't proceed today. Even if there is jurisdiction, the fact remains that the appellant has failed to support its allegation that there is some sort of error in this matter.
Could you repeat the jurisdictional point?
Yes.
You were just
5717.04, the statute that provides for appeal to this court from the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals, requires that the appellant specify the individual errors in its notice of appeal. This court has, on many occasions, whether it be interpreting 5717.04 or 5717.02, which is applicable interchangeably.
And what is the specific problem then in this case with the notice of appeal?
The notice of appeal only raises general allegations. It doesn't specifically state what it is that the BTA did that may have been an abuse of discretion, either in its weighing of the evidence or reaching its conclusion. It merely made general statements and general allegations, which are not sufficient to invoke the jurisdiction of this court. The court has stated on many occasions that general statements not specifying the exact nature of error complained of do not confer jurisdiction. We've also stated that we have made clear that a specification of error must not be so generic that it fails to set the case apart from any other case involving the same tax. The court also noted in Turner versus Levin that the appellant's failure to specify the errors complained of under 5717.04 was fatal to the appellant's case. Because the appellant failed to specify the issue in either the assignment of error or to flesh that out in any way in the brief, this court should find that the appellant failed to satisfy the requirements of 5717.04 when it made such general statements that did not specify the exact nature of the error complained of. Ultimately, though, even if there is jurisdiction over this matter, the appellant has failed to point to any specific error in its brief. It has failed to indicate how the BTA, either in its weighing of the evidence, its analysis, or its determination, somehow ignored this court's instructions as it claims. It clearly reviewed the evidence in the record. It addressed the four items specified by this court. It applied what it believed to be the proper weight. None of that is an abuse of discretion. And the appellant has not pointed to any distinctly legal error in the BTA's discussion. The court noted that in the first decision in this case with respect to the arm's length nature. The court stated again that because the appellant had not pointed to any distinctly legal error in the BTA's discussion, it was going to uphold the BTA's determination on the arm's length nature. It distinguished, however, the recency issue, finding that a footnote and temporal proximity were not sufficient. On remand, the BTA has performed the same thorough and explicit determination that it did with the arm's length nature the first time around. And now that it has done that, appellant again has failed to point to any legal error with the BTA's discussion. The BTA clearly considered all the evidence in the record, including the items that were not even specifically mentioned by this court, and after placing the proper weight, it determined that the sale was a recent sale. Accordingly, this court should defer to its findings and those made by the BTA on remand and affirm the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kreitz. Mr. Petkovic, you've reserved 54 seconds.
Thank you, sir.
The due diligence that we're talking about is a set of facts and circumstances and investigation that would have happened prior to May of 2003. The remand from this court, bear in mind, was 2004 and 2005. As I indicated earlier, the Board of Tax Appeals itself, in a separate case, had found that with regard to this particular property, circumstances had deteriorated. Now, the Board of Revision hearing was in 2006. This court has repeatedly said that facts and circumstances occurring before and after tax lien date can be evidentiary. Now we have a situation where the Board of Revision affirmed an auditor's determination of $2.6 million. It was the Board of Education that filed the appeal to the Board of Tax Appeals. You know, in the Cummings case that this court had recent vintage to decide, they talked about not shifting this burden of proof. And the prima facie case that they made was more than well overcome, as this court found in its decision in 2009.
Thank you, Mr. Petkovic. This case will be submitted, and the parties will be advised of the court's decision.